everybody, and welcome to That's Life, the show where we think fasting for a day is a great idea when you're going to be eating for three. Good afternoon, folks, and thanks for listening. I am Miriam L. Wallach, blogger, writer, and general manager here at the Nachum Segal Network. You can find me here every Thursday at 2 p.m., as I hope to bring you a little entertainment, a little news, and a little relief that the life you are leading is not nearly as wacky as mine. Coming to you from the home of the Nachum Segal Network on the beautiful Lower East Side, I'm joined by Duke. What's up, David?
How's it going?
It's going fine. We've had an exciting morning here this morning.
That we have.
Yeah. You'd think that for those of you keeping track at home who have listened to the show beforehand when we've had oversized little thingies coming to visit us that have no tails. Let's just say for the record, they have no tails. But it's the equivalent. We're almost having some kind of like menagerie, like zoo. We got the birds in the windows. We've had little creepy crawlies on the floor. And this morning when David and I came into the studio, there were other deceased but present creepy crawlies.
And I like to compliment you on your excellent attitude in dealing with them.
Yes, it was me standing in the hall screaming at the door and begging them to go away. Now, to David's credit, they were dead. And to David's credit, he not only did he get rid of those, but he's also the bird-like whisperer. You know, David's getting rid of all the stuff.
I think whisper like keeps them alive, but you know.
Okay, whatever. you give them their last rites to all the things that have died. And so I will say that I'm a little nervous right now being in here. It's a shout out to Scott Goldberg, Dr. Scott Goldberg, who actually hasn't been here in a while. Our schedules have completely conflicted. He is the co-host of the segment Teachable Moments, and we look forward to having him back. But he's just as freaked out by this stuff as I am. So I'm having a Scott Goldberg moment right now. If you're a new listener to the show, thank you for taking a break from your day to tune in. And if you are a returning listener, thanks as always for making us part of your day. If Miriam L. Wallach once a week is just not enough for you, do what Yocheved Seidman does. Friend me on Facebook or send me an invite on LinkedIn. You can also shoot me an email, miriam@nachumsegal.com. I will not respond to you during the show. I am not being rude. I'm just being honest. But I will make sure to get back to you afterwards. Also, please follow us on Twitter, Nachum Segal Net. That's our handle, Nachum Segal Net, all one word. You know, by the way, Duke, that a lot of people are still talking about this Marco Rubio water break, even though it's like 10 days old, as if we have nothing else to talk about.
It was interesting. I mean, it showed that he was human and, you know, he wasn't as polished as he seemed.
Right. You know, it's funny because I had this conversation with a rummy last week and he was like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's not a this. And I'm like, it is a big deal. I thought it was a big deal.
They raised $100,000 off of that.
Who's they?
There's a charity that started selling water bottles.
Stop it.
With his name on it.
And I'm so stupid that I never come up with this stuff.
And they sold like 4,000 and it came out to like $100,000.
Are you kidding me?
No, not at all.
That's craziness. What a country. What a country. Are you serious?
100%.
I want to know what the charity is for. Of course.
I'll tell you in a second.
I was about to say, you'll figure it out in 2 seconds. By the way, we're going to break things up a little bit because I want to get our first guest on. So we're going to do our national holidays, and then we're going to get to the fortune cookie of the day after our first guest. So today, it is International Mother Language Day. It's also Tanis Esther. For those people who didn't get my intro reference, usually Tanis Esther is directly the day before Purim, but that's not the way it works out this year. So basically, my fasting for one day has to last for stuffing my face for 3 days. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. I understand that Tzom Gedaliah after Rosh Hashanah thing, that makes perfect sense to me. But the preemptive fasting to make room for 3 days of eating, I don't think there's enough room. I'm going to have to run some extra miles. I wish you could see Duke's face. He's really quite intrigued as to what he's reading. It's also National Date Week. And by date here, I mean fruit. Not as in go get yourself a date. By the way, big fan of dates in general. It's also not National Entrepreneurship Week. It is George Washington's birthday, as we know that. And we thank the dead presidents for giving us off on Monday. I really, truly appreciate it. It is also Introduce a Girl to Engineering Day. I have no idea how that works. And let's see, it's National Justice for Animals Week. Mm-hmm. There's a National Conference on Education. Thank you, Yael Lassen, for throwing that in. That's interesting. It's Brotherhood and Sisterhood Week from the 17th to the 23rd. I feel like I'm delinquent because I'm only starting today, and obviously it's been going on for days. That's embarrassing. And finally, it's Read Me Week starting today. It is Read Me Week. So I highly recommend that whatever your favorite book is, pick it up and read it to someone. I am I'm a big, big fan of reading Dr. Seuss to my kids, specifically The Lorax and Green Eggs and Ham. The Lorax because it teaches you to take care of the environment, and Green Eggs and Ham because what's the moral of the story? You might as well try something new. You never know if you're going to like it. Anyway, Crazy follows me everywhere. Thank you, Yael, for all that work. Crazy follows me everywhere. And this week, it brought me back to a conversation with my son, who, my youngest son, who has picked up on all of the Carnival cruise ship chatter that has been going on. And it brought conversations to my Shabbos table. Would we ever go on a cruise? We've never been on a cruise, frankly, because I'm convinced that my kids would try to jump. So that's not my idea of a good time, is to follow them into the ocean. And tethering them to the railing for the duration of a cruise is also probably frowned upon. So going on a cruise is not something we have ever really entertained. But the conversation was brought up. We started talking about it. And when I said they've been eating candy sandwiches because there's been no food, they were like, ooh, candy sandwiches. I'm like, no, that's a bad thing. So we were discussing all this stuff. And then my son says to me in the car on Sunday, he said, Mommy, why haven't we ever gone on a cruise? I said, because I have to tell you, I have no interest in going on a cruise. He goes, is that because it could sink? I said, no, that's not what the reason is. And he said, I think you don't want to go on a cruise because it could sink at any time. And he's talking like this. And I said, no, that's really not the reason. I said, and by the way, the plane that we travel in that goes up in the air could come down, but we still get on the plane the same way we get in a car, because a car could crash, but we still get in the car. He's like, nope, those aren't the reasons. He said it's a big ship and there's a lot of water and that ship is really heavy and it could just go plop at any time. And I'm like, and I looked at him, I said, but it doesn't, and not that I wanted my kids all of a sudden to have a fear of flying, because that would have been bad, or a fear of getting in the car, or a fear of, frankly, walking out on the street on Central Avenue, because God knows people think that's a contact sport. But anyway, he says to me, he we're having this conversation, I said, it doesn't scare you at all? It doesn't, like, shock you at all to get into a plane and watch it go up in the air? And I said, with nothing holding it up? And he looks at me, he says, no. Like, looking at me like I'm crazy, no. But that ship is very big. And I'm like, all right, you know what? We're going to end this conversation over here because it's not going anywhere. Anyway, you're listening to That's Life. I am Miriam L. Wallach, and I am joined by my first guest. Batya Jacob is the Director of Educational Support Services for Yachad, the National Jewish Council for Disabilities, and good friends of ours here at the Nachum Segal Network. She is the Director of the International Jewish Resource Center for Inclusion and Special Education. She consults with educators throughout the United States and Canada on how to modify curriculum, teacher style, and assessment for all of the learning in a classroom. She has developed a sensitivity workshop for junior high school and high school students, which helps students understand the challenges that their peers may be experiencing. And this workshop has had over 5,000 participants. That's an incredible number. During its implementation 2 years ago, Batya is also a member of the Non-Public School Advisory Committee to the Department of Education in Trenton, New Jersey. She has worked at Yachad for the past 15 years in both education and programming, and she joins us today. Hello, Batya.
Good morning. How are you?
Welcome to the Lower East Side.
Thank you. I haven't been here for many, many years.
Yeah? Did it look different the last time you were here?
Yes.
What was... I have this conversation with my kids all the time. My kids come to the Lower East Side, as we did over the weekend, and their major landmarks are Eldridge Street, because they've gone to the Eldridge Street Synagogue with school, the Pickle Store, Bialy's, and the pizza store. And that, to them, is the Lower East Side at this point.
And to me, it was Schmulke Bernstein.
Say, ah, there you go. That's a shout-out, right?
And Grand Silver.
Oh, for the days that Grand Silver was actually on Grand Street.
On Grand Street. Right? I walked up and down Grand Street and couldn't find it.
Oh, that's okay. We had a guest here a couple weeks ago who called me, and he said, I'm at 551 Grand, and it's locked. It's closed. And I said, I'm here. So he said, it's gated closed. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I said, are you in Manhattan? And he said, no, I'm in Brooklyn. I'm like, right, that would be the problem. So what? I'm not even sure where to start, even though we definitely want to talk about the health initiative that's coming up and the programming that's being available. But can we talk for a second about the 5,000 participants that you've had in that program?
Yeah.
How did that program start? And let's tell everybody about it.
So 2 years ago, as part of our North American Inclusion Month.
NAIM. I love that acronym, by the way.
Me too. we decided that we really wanted to reach students. There was a lot of bullying going on in schools. And we are including more and more students into our regular classrooms, especially in the day schools. So we felt that there had to be a way to sensitize the children on what their peers were going through. So we put together a workshop. It has the schools can choose from about 17 or 18 different stations. Each station is set up to mirror a different type of challenge.
Okay.
So there's one that mirrors autism, and there was one that mirrors ADHD, and one that mirrors speech, hearing, all different types of challenges. And the kids go in small groups around from table to table and actually experiences what it is to have that challenge. So, for instance, if they are doing the workshop on gross motor challenges,
okay,
they're jumping rope, but they're using a walker to do it.
So gross motor, just so people understand, are things like?
Things like issues where they can't move their legs and arms as whole units easily. Fine motor would be more specific, picking things up and cutting and writing.
Have you ever been to the Deaf Museum or the Blind Museum in Israel?
I have been to the Blind Museum in Israel. I have experienced that.
Uh-huh.
For blindness, we blindfold the kids and we have them sort coins into different cups.
Wow.
And then we talk about what they do for dollar bills, because all dollar bills
feel
and
shape
the same. I just heard about a new app that actually can read a code on the bills and tell you what the money amount is. Yeah. I just heard about this last year.
I don't mean to sound completely stupid, but how do you choose that app?
I don't know for sure. We'll get back to you.
Stupid?
No, I haven't found it, but I heard about this about 2 weeks ago, and I've been trying to
investigate it. I guess you can use Siri and say, I mean, this is, you know, listen to what we're talking about in 2013. It's really quite a conversation. I know that when we my daughter went to the Blind Museum, and within about 25 seconds, she had a complete panic attack, and they tried to talk her through it, as they are trained to do, and she couldn't do it, and they, you know, basically gave her like an escape hatch.
Right.
It's kind of a thing. But it's incredibly overwhelming to a visitor. And it's not a criticism. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they do a phenomenal job. And I have to imagine, I guess this brings me to my next question for you, is that have there been any moments where a participant in one of your programs has been completely overwhelmed and shut down and said, like, this is too much for me?
So actually, I just was at a school in Bergen County.
Okay.
2 weeks ago. And one of the tables is an autism table. So what we do is autistic children with autism have issues where their different senses are so overstimulated that it overwhelms them and they can't do any sort of activities or function. So we had a little boy who was clearly on that spectrum as part of the group, and he got to that table.
Oh, my.
And you could see he was, like, really starting to freak out. And I went up to him and I said, do you want to just, like, take a break? And he said, no, I've got to be here.
Wow.
And then afterwards,
I would have panicked and asked you to help me out. Yeah.
So afterwards, we always have, like, a sum up at the end. We have an introduction sum up. And at the sum up, he raises his hand and he says, I have to say something. And I said, go ahead. This is a 10-year-old boy. He said, I sat at that table, and that's the way I live every single day. But you know what's different? When you guys got overwhelmed, you could get up and go to another table.
Wow.
But I can't. And it was just this amazing aha moment.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah.
And he's in a completely inclusionary setting?
He's an inclusionary day school in Bergen County. His principal said he never talks about this.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I am Kol hakavod to a kid, and by the way, to his parents and to that school.
Absolutely.
His parents for giving him the strength, and for the school to making it a safe environment for him to be able to say that.
Absolutely.
Now, somebody might say, well, he may not be aware completely of the ramifications of speech or, you know, an announcement like that or a speech such as that, because within the spectrum, there is this kind of, you know, inability to, or limited socialization in terms of really understanding sometimes in terms of how your comments or whatever will be taken by others. But I have to imagine he really weighed his words before speaking.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. Absolutely. So what are some of the other stations that kids go through?
There's autism, ADHD.
You know what? We should have done this beforehand. I should have brought a blindfold. And we should have done this so that I could have experienced it on the air. We'll do it next time.
We'll come back.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I have a feeling that, you know, there's going to be some kind of prank involved at one point with, like, me putting my hands in jelly or something.
No.
Okay.
No. Because we want it to be realistic.
Right.
So there is.
So if you make a joke out of it, then it's just a joke. But if we set the setting that kids are taking it seriously and that this is not some kind of Purim carnival.
Exactly.
Then we're good to go. Okay. Exactly. So what are the other?
There's hearing, where we give a hearing test, spelling test. The first time it's spoken by a boy who's deaf, and the second time it's spoken by me. And they have to compare how they hear the words.
Wow.
Because if you don't hear the sounds, you can't say the sounds. There's auditory processing, which is an auditory memory. There's a dyslexic table where we have paragraphs written as if it's as if you're reading it as a dyslexic would read it.
Mm. What kind of follow-up do kids get? I mean, you know.
So we give them, we send the school a pamphlet. We call it a passport to sensitivity, where the kids can take it home and review the different things they did. We give the school guidelines of how to talk about it in class afterwards.
Okay.
And activities that the school can then bring into the school, like a inclusive Purim carnival, for instance, where or a Yachad Shabbaton, mm-hmm. where they can come and really follow up with the inclusion. And we introduce the workshop as we talk about people in the Torah who have disabilities,
like Moshe Rabbeinu.
All the kids know Moshe Rabbeinu, that he had a speech problem. Yitzchak is blind. Yaakov limps.
I'm sure that most
there's
people...
There's many, many people. Leah has a depression disorder. Mm. Ehud is paralyzed in his right hand, so they call him a lefty. So they're all different people, and that really brings it to life to the kids that here
right.
the Torah is inclusive, so we need to be able to make ourselves more inclusive and more willing to be with our peers.
And I'm sure that they don't realize it when they're reading it. When we're learning it in Chumash or whatever it is, it doesn't hit you that all of a sudden we're talking about leaders of our nation and our matriarchs, etc., as people as being human
right.
and normal
right.
and having, you know, perfections and imperfections, and then all of a sudden saying, oh my gosh, Moshe Rabbeinu really did have a disability. And looking at the Torah through that lens has to be eye-opening.
It really is. And the kids have their eyes open, because very often they'll go through a different table and they'll say, oh, you know what? That's the way I concentrate.
Hmm.
Or that's the way I write or read. And the idea is everybody has strengths and weaknesses, but it doesn't make us better or worse than the next person. So if we can ask our friends to be tolerant of our own weaknesses, we should certainly be tolerant of our peers, even though they might be classified as being different.
You're listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I'm Miriam L. Wallach, joined by Yachad's only, Batya Jacobs. I think we're going to refer to you that way, by the way. I think that's a good title for you, because you seem to, the program that specifically you came on the air to talk about is just like a snippet of everything else that you do there. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention Ellie Hagler, of course, once during the program, because
Absolutely.
That's become an ongoing joke. But Ellie Hagler, I mean, besides the fact that he, you know, talks about you with such high regard, and he does not talk about me in such high regard, that's for sure. But he also made it very clear that the program, the Women's Health and Wellness Series that is coming up, what's the date? One second.
The first day is this coming
this
Monday,
right.
February 25th.
All of which is located at the OU at 11 Broadway, that these were only a portion of the things that you do. So I'm happy that we also spoke about the other programming beforehand. But let's take a moment to, by the way, for people who don't know, this email with all the information about this upcoming programming, Women's Health and Wellness Series for Women with Developmental Disabilities and their parents, guardians, and caretakers. This information has been out all over the place. There've been email blasts. There's really been a tremendous amount of publications, a number of publications that have included the information about this. But if people don't know about it, they can also go on the Yachad website, correct?
Correct, and the OU website.
So let's talk about this. Whose brainchild was this? Because this is genius. This and the job fair and a number of other programs to me are so forward thinking. So whose brainchild? You can say it was yours.
So I guess it was mine.
Yay! See, this is why Ellie talks about you. Okay, yeah.
Really, we came about a year ago. I started as I'm visiting schools and seeing our girls with developmental disabilities and working with the DAHAB program, the Adults More. We're seeing that there's a huge gap in the information that girls are being given, women are being given about their own bodies.
Okay.
So we proposed to put together a four-part workshop.
Okay.
On how the girls can better protect themselves and know their own bodies. So the first one, which is this coming Monday, February 25th, is about nutrition and exercise, the importance of eating right, of exercising, of being able to make good choices, and keeping your body healthy. And the second one is actually about women's cancers. We found
that's on the 11th. That's Monday, March 11th. So these are four Mondays in a row.
They're actually about every 2 weeks. They're Monday nights at 7 o'clock at the OU building, 11 Broadway on the 14th floor. They are free of charge.
Wow.
We ask for people to RSVP so we can be prepared for them.
Right.
But they are completely free of charge. We will supply a sign language interpreter.
That, by the way, I want to read all of the things. Because that's one of the things I loved the most about this flyer, besides the fact that the topics to me are, again, very forward thinking, very smart, and also recognizing, in my opinion, the same way the job fair does, that we are enabling people with disabilities to really be part of the world, be as independent as possible.
Correct.
And there are many things that we need to cover in order to do that, whether it's finding employers, and Nahum will be talking about the job fair more on JM and the AM, but it's about finding employers who are open enough to want to hire and include people with disabilities in their workforce. And it's also about trying to make people with disabilities as independent, living independently as possible. And that's where this comes in, which I think is fascinating. So it says, educational materials will be available, large print on request, which to me is fantastic. Seminars will be wheelchair accessible and able to accommodate service animals, which is, again, I mean, just people are thinking of everything. American Sign Language interpreters will be available upon request. And this program has been endorsed by the American Cancer Society and Sharsheret. Just good for you guys. Okay, so this week, this Monday, is Health and Nutrition for Women. The next Monday is Women's Cancers, Risk, Prevention, and Treatment.
Correct. We were actually having somebody from the American Cancer Society come down with models of breasts to teach the the women how to check for lumps.
Sharsheret does that.
Sharsheret does more, not so much prevention, but more how to work with the women who are breast cancer victims and survivors afterwards. But we felt we had a woman who came in and she was diagnosed with breast cancer. Nobody had ever stopped to teach these girls how to check. We go to the mikveh and there's a sign up in the mikveh, but these women are not necessarily doing that.
Going to the mikveh, right.
The third week is actually geared towards the parents and guardians on how to talk to their daughters about their changing bodies, about what it is to menstruate, about what happens with their hormones. They need to know this is very normal, that they're not the only ones going through this. Parents have no idea how to address this with their children.
With their children with, and by the way, as a person, as a parent of six and four daughters, it's not just that parents have no idea how to address this with children with disabilities. Parents struggle with this all the time.
And absolutely.
I'm saying to myself, you know, thank God I am blessed. My six children are mainstreamed, et cetera, and healthy, and I have not had to avail myself of all of Yachad's services. But all of these conversations are things I need to be having, that not that I'm not having them, but an ongoing conversation with every one of my kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The fourth week is...
So the third week, you're right. The third week is your daughter's changing body. And the three speakers, by the way, are Dr. Norman Ravsky, I got to make this font a little bit bigger. Yeah, David's like, huh? Your eyes. Dr. Anna Tirado, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Correct.
And Jory Belkin, who's a professional doula.
Doula.
Which is very exciting. This program specifically is geared towards the parent or guardian. Why is that?
Because we believe that this information, this education should be starting in the home. And therefore, we need to be addressing the parents first. And the guardians first. We need them to understand how to talk to their children so that if it comes up in school, because, you know, we all went through this health education, which was, you know.
Or not so education.
Or
it's
not
called
so education.
The school bus, Batya. Right.
It's supposed to come from the parents.
Right.
These are your children.
This is what I tell my kids all the time, by the way, because before they went to camp and before they were old enough to understand what was being spoken about on the back of the bus, I said to them all the time, I said, get your information from me. Ask me anything. I will answer anything.
Right.
But get your information from me.
I agree. So we really feel that it's empowering the parents to be able to be responsible for their own families. The third week, we're actually working with a woman from the Brooklyn DA's office.
Wow.
Who trains women on relationships and intimacy, what's appropriate relationships, what's not appropriate.
That's Hannah White?
That's Hannah White. How to say no to somebody, how to protect yourself.
Yeah.
And we feel this is really, really important because women who have developmental disabilities are so prone to be victims.
Right.
And they don't even realize they're being victims. So we need to educate them on that subject.
I think that in light of the news lately, I would say that even women without disabilities need to be educated as to what it means to be touched in inappropriate ways or ways that are just downright wrong. So this conversation is incredibly important. And I would have to say not just recognizing when a touch is inappropriate, but the power of saying no.
Absolutely.
So I think that that's incredible.
And the power to tell somebody that something's going on.
No secrets.
Exactly.
No secrets. Wow. And you're co-speaking that night.
I'm co-hosting that night. I'm going to be helping Hannah make it appropriate for
the Jewish community.
The Jewish community and also for the developmentally disabled community.
Is this the first time that she or anyone from the DA's office has brokered with you in this kind of a program?
To my knowledge.
Wow. That's great. Well, again, I mean, that's fantastic. Batya Jacob, director of the International Jewish Resource Center for Inclusion and Special Education and Yachad Guru. I see I'm changing your title as I go along. Joins me here at That's Life. You're listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I am Miriam Elwalk, and we are discussing the Women's Health and Wellness Series brought to you by Yachad that begins this Monday and is available free of charge to anyone who comes. It starts at 7 p.m., this Monday, 11 Broadway at the OU, 11 Broadway on the 14th floor in the conference room, which I'm pretty sure is the same place we had our ping pong tournament almost 2 weeks ago, it was 2 weeks ago today. That's craziness. You weren't there, were you?
No, I wasn't. I was actually at schools that day.
Oh, you mean you were working?
Okay. I was working.
Hagler, that's all I have to say to you. Batya, let me just ask you also, has anybody, because you can't make friends everywhere, has anybody seen this flyer and said, we should not be talking about this?
No.
Well, thank God.
I actually, we're trying to develop a lot of visual materials for the women that they can take back home with them. And I actually went to Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, who is our posek for Yachad, to review the pictures with him because some of them can be pretty explicit to get the message across.
Right.
And his answer to us was, this is chinuch, and it is so important. You can use what you need.
And probably pikuach nefesh also, if you're thinking about it.
And our hope is to do a similar sort of series with men in the fall.
Next question. Okay, so go for it. Take the words right out of my mouth. Go.
Sorry.
That's all right. Good for you.
You know, we're in the process of working on what sort of topics we're going to go to the men with.
Mm-hmm.
One of them will certainly be also nutrition and exercise.
Right.
We're hoping to get a speaker on men's cancers.
Mm.
We're going to talk to parents again about how to talk to their sons because boys' bodies change too.
Right.
And developmentally disabled individuals have the same needs and drives as everybody else does, but they don't know that that's what they're supposed to be feeling at that age. So that we think that's really very critical. And also boys need to be taught how to say no and how to be protective of themselves.
I was about to say, this is unfortunately not a girl's issue.
Correct.
This is an overall issue.
We felt that it would be more comfortable to separate the genders so that they can more freely talk about their concerns and their questions.
Right.
And that's why we're doing it as a separate program, even though we really believe in co-ed programs in general. We felt this one needed to be separate genders.
And are you going to be a prominent speaker at that one also? Or are you going to say to me, no, I think we should have one of the men. Do you have a male counterpart?
I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay.
My husband.
I meant yachad. I didn't say, do you have a better half? I said, do you have a...
I really felt that women, for the most part, should be talking to the women and men should be talking to the men. Again, it's a comfort level.
Right.
So I'm in the process, and I'm hoping over the summer to really develop a good foundation of speakers for the men's issues that are male.
Interesting. So who do you – any idea who you have in the lineup?
Not yet.
It's too early. So does that mean you'll come back and we'll talk about it again?
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. So anybody who's looking for further information, you can email Batya directly at batyaj@ou.org. You can call 212-613-8127. You can also go on the Yachad website, njcd.org. By the way, for people who don't know, that's the National Jewish Council
for Disabilities.
For Disabilities, right. It's the there used to be another acronym, right? A long time ago. I'm dating myself.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm dating myself. That's fine. We won't talk about
you
it.
You can also go on to yachad.org.
You can go on to yachad.org. It's the same site. Thank you. And we're talking about Monday, this Monday, the 25th, again at Yachad, 14th floor conference room at 11 Broadway. And people have to call in advance, correct?
We really would prefer they call in advance. It makes the logistics of getting them into the building easier.
Right. I've tried to get into the building. You need to be on a list. Don't try and just sneak in. That's a 7 p.m. start time. And by the way, for those people who are taking mass transit, the 1, the N, the R, the 4, and the 5 are all a block away. And I can tell you, because I've taken most of them to the OU, because it is the easiest way to get down there is by using mass transit. If you're going to drive... If you're going to drive down to the OU, there is parking available in various lots, but nothing is right there. I really recommend that if you want to get there, you should take mass transit. Anyway, Batya, thanks again for joining me. I appreciate you coming to the Lower East Side. I'm happy to say that this interview has been critter-free. So far, so good. Baruch Hashem for that. And again, this Monday, the 25th, 7 p.m., you can go to yachad.org for more information. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Totally my pleasure. You're listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I am Miriam Elwala coming to you from the Lower East Side. And I just want to tell you something. I've decided to skip the fortune cookie segment. I know at the beginning of the show that I said that I would bring it in a little bit later, but frankly, I'm fasting and I'm going to want to eat it. So I decided not to even open it. We're going to have to put it aside. Ooh, that's a bad sound. We're going to have to put it aside. That makes it worse. Okay. We're going to, David, you all right? Yeah, I know. We're going to have to put the fortune cookies aside, but what I'm looking forward to doing, however, is bringing fortune cookies with us next week to Israel. Please God, That's Life will be live from the OU Center, where Yachad hosts its annual pre-Jerusalem Marathon pasta party. And Nachum and I will be live from the OU Center during That's Life with the time difference. It's basically the same exact time where the pasta party is going on. So we look forward to speaking to you from there, and I will probably be bringing fortune cookies with me because I'm just that kind of gal. But until today's show is over, we are going to stay foodless, but we will be talking to somebody whom I like to spend time with. I don't get to see him often enough, but I like to schmooze with him when I can. Freelance writer, freelance journalist, Michael Orbach is not new here to the program, but we have not had him in a while, but he's had a lot going on. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Miriam. Great to be on. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. By the way, I don't know if you know, but a couple of weeks ago, it was National Freelance Writer Day. And we gave you a shout-out.
I must have missed National Freelance Writer Day. What a shame.
I know. By the way, you know why I think you missed it? Because there are no Hallmark cards for National Freelance Writer Day.
You know, maybe it's your poor, we're sorry
kind
of card.
You are more than a struggling artist. You are a struggling freelance writer, and that's a whole new category kind of a thing.
Hey, it is a wonderful, wonderful field, and I am thrilled to be doing what I do. I tend to work with a lot of really great people at a lot of different organizations.
Right.
So I am happy with my position, I guess.
Well, I have to tell you, you've had a lot going on. I know that I've been watching you on Facebook and keeping track of some of the stuff going on, one of which, I mean, I have to tell you the story about the partridge.
Yes, it's a fun story.
It's hysterical, and we're going to talk about that. You have a number of very interesting articles that you've recently put out, a couple with Tablet, one with JTA, that are all completely unique. And what I think makes them the most exciting is that they don't pigeonhole you as a writer. No pigeon bird puns.
No pun on that one.
Sorry.
I guess.
Yeah. So when I said it, I'm like, oh, somebody's going to think I really.
Yeah, I did claim that the Philby's partridge looks like a drunk New York City pigeon.
Right. You did. That was a great line. It's almost as good as, you know what my favorite Michael Auerbach line is.
Which is?
You don't know this? You started an article for the Jewish Star with "Why did the chicken cross the road?"
Oh, to avoid the kaparet.
Right.
To avoid kaparet. That was a good article.
Yeah, that was a great article, and frankly, I still don't know why I find that line funny, but I do.
Well, it's always good if you can start an article like that.
Yeah, well, I will tell you that yesterday when David and I were driving back from Ashar, where we did a remote JM in the AM, we were driving back on the Palisades, and we were both a little bit exhausted, a little bit punchy, and I said that I had recently said something to Steven when we were, I think we were in Florida or whatever with the kids over vacation, and one of the kids like crossed the street and shouldn't have. And Steven said, why'd you cross the street? And I'm like, to get to the other side. And he looked at me, he's like, you're not helping.
You're not being a parent right now.
I know. Sometimes it's just a good line. You can't let it go. But anyway, all right, let's talk about the partridge.
The
partridge is a hysterical story, not only for all the reasons that this story would be funny, but also because I know Loiki.
Really? So just for background,
yeah, I was about to say, let's let everyone else in. Right.
So the story I ended up doing is I was actually sitting in my office. I still work part-time for NCSY, which is the youth outreach organization of the OU. And I heard someone talking about this story. It was Chaim Loiki, the person who I profiled, about how he needed more Facebook friends because he didn't have enough Facebook friends to help support his mission to save this endangered bird that may or may not be endangered because it may or may not be kosher.
Right.
So just all those conditional statements kind of caught, just got me interested in it. So I spoke to him, and I actually went to visit him in the birds, and he essentially, Chaim Loiki, who is a rabbinic coordinator for the Orthodox Union, is a, I don't want to say, there's a term for avian specialist, but I don't like to use those terms, but essentially he is the bird expert at the OU.
He's the bird whisperer.
Exactly.
I thought it was David, but it's not. He's the bird whisperer.
Yes, exactly. And he apparently, a donor found out about these birds that he thought were kosher, and he wanted Rabbi Chaim Loiki to check it out and investigate. And then it turned out that they may or may not be endangered. At least you can't get them readily in the United States. So what Chaim wanted to do was to raise enough money off one of these fundraising sites to be able to breed them in captivity and eventually have them as a zoo. I mean, he's not the end joke of the article. The reason why he wants to save them is because we can eat them.
Right.
But he personally doesn't want to eat them because he likes chicken.
Oh, okay. And I guess it doesn't taste like chicken.
It's supposed to be delicious, but I have not. I don't have any first-hand experience with the Philby's partridge.
The whole thing is crazy. Now, why do I know Chaim Loiki? I mean, I have not seen him in 100 years, and I only peripherally know him. But when I saw the article, I'm like, is that really who I think it is? Because he was a teacher at Hafter a long time ago.
That he was.
Yes, and we overlapped. I think he was whenever he was there, we overlapped. And I remember being completely horrified because I came into the teacher's room one day, and there was some kind of a live bird in a cage, and I was having a heart attack because, as a vegetarian, I only wanted to free the bird.
Ah, fair enough. He actually does have a very wide collection of birds. Oh, I'm just checking onto his site. He has raised $1,000.
And how much money does he have to raise to save the birds he wants to eat?
Well, he can probably save it without all the money, but it would make it much easier.
Is crazy, right?
Yeah, but he did raise 1,000 out of 5,000, which isn't a bad idea, which isn't bad, admittedly.
Right, that is true. That is true. So, well, what are the other some of the birds that he keeps in? I don't even want to know where he.
So he's raised. I think the best story he told me was that he actually was trying to prove that a wild turkey was the same thing as a domestic turkey.
And by the way, not wild turkey in a bottle. Let's make that clear.
No, clearly. Okay. That is definitely kosher.
Right.
as I should know as a freelancer.
And because Purim's around the corner.
Exactly, right. Exactly, okay. Exactly. So he's raised a wide variety of birds. He didn't raise a wild turkey, but he brought in a wild turkey. And apparently when they brought the wild turkey in, I mentioned in the article, it was none too happy about being welcomed as kosher, and it destroyed a keyboard.
Right.
They're vicious, vicious birds. But they also taste delicious, apparently, as well.
Can I ask one dumb question?
Go ahead.
Who let the turkey out?
Thank you, Miriam.
Sorry.
Who did leave the turkey out?
Sorry.
He raised lace and teal white winter ducks, Mahler ducks, lots of other birds. He told me that a Hasidic Rebbe once gave him an African gray parrot and as a gift.
Are you
and
serious?
He said,
did he kill it?
No. He told me his quote was, "You wouldn't believe how much it talked."
The whole article is funny. You have to admit
that.
Yeah,
it's funny, though, because the last article I did about tablet previous to this was about how a mikvah in Omaha went dry and the creative ways the Jewish community went to fill it up. And eventually, they had to bring in about 3 tons of ice.
Right. I was going to ask you about that. So should we talk about that one next?
Sure. I mean,
okay,
it's a fun story. A friend emailed me this blog post that someone had done in Omaha where there was a drought over the summer and they had no rain and someone had accidentally emptied the mikvah. And the nearest mikvah was about 3.5 hours away, so they were trying to come up with a solution to fill the mikvah again and make it kosher. And the solution they found, given the complexities of the mikvah laws, was to fill it up with 3 tons of ice.
Wow.
And it was a whole experiment how to get the ice there and different things. It was just a really nice, very cute story that I did for Tablet. And and after I finished that article, the final email I sent out about the mikvah story, I had just heard about Rabbi Chaim Loike, so I pitched that story to them, and they picked it right off.
And good for them. They're both great stories and completely diverse.
They're both very interesting stories. It's funny, though, just when you mentioned it, back in the Jewish Star days when I was really focused on, writing a lot about sexual abuse, and now that I'm doing these very different stories that are very, very positive about the Orthodox community.
Right. I was thinking about that, not to interrupt you, but I was thinking about that as well, how when you and I were at the Star, I think one of the first times you were on the air with Mayer and I, you were talking about the most recent abuse
scandal.
Correct, that you had been in the courtroom and you and everything that had gone on. And I remember you and I either talking about it on the air or talking about it afterwards, how you go back to the computer, how you go back to work, how you whatever. And I was so happy to be looking over these articles and saying, all right, Orbach's waking up in the morning with a smile on his face.
Yeah. Hey, nothing too controversial. I actually, I'm doing a lot of really nice stories now. Since I work for NCSY, I just helped edit the most recent issue of NCSY's Ignite magazine.
Which is fantastic, by the way. I got the last issue.
And really?
I was really very impressed.
Oh, great. I work with amazing, amazing people at the NCSY office. Director of Marketing for NCSY is Davis Dollar from the Five Towns, actually.
Right.
I lived in the city. And Tova Flankbaum, both incredible editors and incredible writers. So we work together. If you like last issue, you're going to love this issue. It's a really great magazine.
What's being featured?
So we have actually a lot of articles in this issue. We have a career retrospective of Rabbi Steven Berg, who was the international director for NCSY for a long time. We have an article about Rivka Abbey, who also has a show on the Nachum Segal Network.
Correct. She is the host of Teen Spirit. That's Tuesday nights
yes,
at 7 p.m. She's amazing, isn't she?
She is phenomenal. She's just like a ray of sunshine, as cliche as that sounds.
I know. She's like a little dynamo. She's a little person. Right?
Exactly. I describe her as naturally exuberant.
Oh, that's better, because I refer to her as Mighty Mouse. But,
That isn't bad either.
Right, okay.
We did a profile of someone who became religious through NCSY and now works at Google. Rather brilliant, very friendly, very interesting fellow by the name of Barry Berkowitz, who's just as nice as they come. And he spoke about his experience at NCSY and how those experiences helped him make him the person who he is today. And what's really cool is he's like, oh, yeah, if you want a job at Google, just I'll see if there's any openings, to which I was like, wow.
Okay, sure. Okay, if you insist. Right.
Hey, totally. There is also actually one of the more interesting articles. Since NCSY is international, we have an article about Chile, about NCSY in Chile, which is fantastic.
Tell me about that a little bit more, because the reason I'm unbelievably interested in what's going on in Chile is that you are the third person recently to tell me about the Jewish community in Chile and how, if I went there, and by the way, I would go. But
you totally should.
If I went there, I would be completely flabbergasted by the vibrant Jewish community available in Chile.
So I actually visited Chile years ago because my cousin was being flown down there as a rabbi to, like, for he had to sign a 2-year contract for, with an organization in Israel to basically lead an Orthodox, be part of the Orthodox community and help out and teach in the school. And I went there, and it was a very vibrant, as you said, community. I mean,
right.
It's basically exploding at this point in terms of there's more. There's now an Orthodox high school. It's very small, but they're starting out. A lot of families are becoming more connected to their Jewish heritage. NCSY is a part of that as well, and we have, I mean, he was a part of it for a long time with the former director. His name is Rabbi Shimon, sorry, I'm just trying to
That's
think about
okay.
it exactly, his, Rabbi Shimon Binger, who started it off about several years ago, and
mm-hmm.
now it's been taken over by a really young, fresh Yeshiva University graduate named Michael Benjo.
Okay.
Who was a star advisor until he became regional director of Chile. And they're doing phenomenal work.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think he describes it best that we're a part of the puzzle that makes Jewish identity inside Chile. It's a fascinating place.
That's great.
And he describes some of the challenges he faces and some things that he can and cannot do because there's a very strong youth movement on Saturday morning, so they can't really hold Shabbatones.
What kind of a youth movement? I don't understand.
Like
a national youth movement?
Sort of, but it's a Zionistic youth movement also.
That's good to know.
But it's
okay.
Jewish, but it's not religious, so it's kind of complicated.
Okay.
But they find a way to make it work, and they're growing exponentially, which is kind of nice.
That's unbelievable. By the way, I don't want to lose the opportunity. Not that I'm not interested in everything going on in Ignite, I am, but I really want to talk about the Jewish Interpreter article.
Oh, which one was that? That was
about the Chinese. About the you wrote it as the D student translator behind the Chinese winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature.
That was actually that story. I actually got stuck in Indiana for a week because of it.
Yeah. By the way, and it's funny because when I originally pulled the email the post off of Facebook. I was like, okay, fine. Like, he met the guy in the city. And then I'm like, okay.
Indiana.
Right.
That
South Bend, Indiana.
Yeah, that was the first time I've ever been flown out anywhere. I actually, once the Nobel Prize winner was announced.
It's not Hawaii, Orbeck. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm hoping to get a better. I actually pitched them something to send me to London, but they rejected. But that's what rejected. I was hoping for London. But,
right. I don't blame you. I'm hoping for London. Yeah.
So I went to Indiana to interview this fellow because Mo Yan is the latest recipient of the Nobel Prize in Literature. He's an amazing, amazing Chinese author. And I had read the article, and obviously I was hoping Philip Roth would win the Nobel Prize in Literature finally, but that'll never happen. But so I didn't know who Mo Yan was at all. And then I noticed that his translator was someone by the last name of Goldblatt, which, I mean, if you're just doing Jewish forensic science, that's
right.
A Jewish name. And I was
exactly.
like, oh, he's Jewish. So I Googled around a little bit and found some information about him, and I pitched a tablet thinking that either A, someone had done it already,
yeah.
someone had pitched it, or B, they weren't really going to be interested, or worst case or best case scenario, they'd just have me do a phone call. And then they told me to actually go down to Indiana and interview him, which I was kind of thrilled by. And this is the week Hurricane Sandy hit, so I kind of got stuck there.
Wait a minute. You take a step back. You were in South Bend, Indiana over being in the five towns during Sandy?
Yes, I kind of was lucky in that regard. But I actually, Miriam, I don't want to disappoint you, I got even luckier, is that they couldn't fly me out of South Bend because of the storm.
Yeah.
But I took a bus to Chicago, so I spent about 4 days in Chicago.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of glorious.
Yeah, by the way, you missed absolutely nothing.
Yeah, well, I came back the next week, and I lived without power for 4 days.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think we were up to, trust me, this is not a top this kind of conversation, but as I like to say, with everything that my family and I went through, and I have nothing to complain about compared to people who are still not in
yeah.
their homes.
No,
yeah.
definitely. And that was actually, it was about November. I remember I found out who won the election through a friend texting me because I had no other way of knowing it.
There was, if I tell you that honestly, I got my best information during the Sandy aftermath from Facebook. It was 10 times better than anything I was getting from the news. And frankly, it was much more up to date. Like as soon as somebody down the block got power, I knew there was hope for me. But it was,
yeah, hey,
it was,
I hear that.
Yeah, it was much more immediate. And it sounds completely ridiculous, but you knew where who had gas stations, who had gas in what gas stations, where things were located, who had milk. Who had lights?
Yeah.
I mean, there was no better source of information, unfortunately or fortunately, than Facebook.
Hey, I actually, just speaking of Facebook, I just covered an event for the Orthodox Union about a singles dating event about dealing with Facebook and texting and dating in the modern age, how to use and how not to use those technologies.
It's funny because when you told me you were covering that, I said, oh my God, I hope this interview is going to be long enough to be able to include hearing a little bit about that. So give me a little bit of what happened the other night, because without giving away the story, I don't want you to give away the story. Can you talk about it a little bit?
I totally can. I mean, do you want to hear a little bit more about Howard Goldblatt and Mo Yan?
I do, but I also know that I have like three or four minutes left, and David
I will tell
is...
you about for the singles event.
Okay.
That was incredibly interesting. They actually asked me to be when I sat down at the. It was a really well-run event at the Cheret Israel, the Spanish Portuguese synagogue on the Upper West Side. It was a roundtable discussion with basically several moderators at each table and several singles between the ages of about 22 to 35, talking about their own experiences and technology's effect on dating if you're Jewish or. Well, if you're Jewish and or religious. It was really interesting to hear what people had to say. Someone, which I'm going to mention in the article, told this horror story about how she was on Saw You at Sinai, and she was dating someone for 2 months on 10 dates, and he closed and he broke up with her by closing the match on Saw You at Sinai without calling her.
No!
Which is like the horror story.
Oh. By the way, that guy, I mean... whatever.
Yeah, so
you know what she's going to do now? You know what she's going to do now? She's going to blast him on Facebook, and that's going to be the end of him.
Hey.
Man have no fury like a woman scorned who has Facebook.
Isn't that
right.
The truth? Exactly.
That's right.
Facebook.
That's right.
A lot of people, there were a lot of interesting topics that came up. There were a lot of moderators. Some of the moderators were from Saw You at Sinai. There was one moderator who I thought was really interesting, was from lastfirstdate.com. I think her name is Sandy... it'll take me a second to find her last name. But she gave a lot of really interesting suggestions, which you usually wouldn't come across, like having a separate email. Her name was, here it is, Sandy Wiener. She's a dating coach. Like having a separate email address for people you're dating.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't think usually most people get verified pretty easily, either
right.
through a matchmaker site like Saw You at Sinai, but in case you're on Firmster or JDate, that's what she suggests, which I don't think is necessarily a bad idea. What I think I took out from the end statements of nearly all the moderators was, despite how things have changed, the more they remain the same. There was this really nice matchmaker. I think it was Helen Greenfield, who just embodies that. The concept you have of a Jewish matchmaker.
Yeah, of course.
And she just embodied that notion, the older Jewish woman, the very friendly, very interested in you. Like, when I sat down at their table, I was like, I'm sorry, I'm just here as a reporter. She's like, but are you single? And I was like, we're not going to talk about that.
Right. So there was a little Tevye and Fiddler going on in the background.
Totally,
awesome.
Exactly. But she said that, like, there's always been bad behavior, and now people just do it in a different way. Like, some people, instead, now people don't contact you and Saw You at Sinai or close the match. Usually they just disappear.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, that's just what happens. It's the more things change, the more they stay the same, as
Terrible.
The old statement goes.
Right.
And some people are just behave poorly no matter what technologies they use.
Well, I have to tell you, Michael, I mean, I don't mean to cut you off, and Lord knows I definitely want to hear more, but I'm just going to have you back on. I think that's...
All right. May I say one more thing that I did that's really interesting?
Literally. David's giving me dirty looks. You can't see him, but David's giving me the
okay.
dirty looks.
Okay, I was a judge at a inter-yeshiva high school poetry competition yesterday. Another time, then. I'll be writing it up for Tablet today, possibly.
Oh, really? Okay, fine. So we're really, by the way, I'm not even kidding that before Yontif, before Pesach, we're going to have to set some time aside.
Miriam, as always for you, I'd love to.
Oh, Michael, you're the
again.
Best. Michael Orbach, thank you so much for joining me.
Take care, Miriam. Be well.
Be well. I love having him on. You've been listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I'm Miriam Elwalk. Thank you for making us part of your day. Let's go through the lineup so you know what not to miss and what to always to look forward to. We have a full afternoon, including Randy, with something to talk about right after this show, plus an encore presentation of Rivka Abbey. Then Ellie Hagler hosts the Jewish Reaction, followed by the Stunt Show. Who's hosting the Stunt Show this week? Let's just take a look. Ah, it is! I was right. It's Fertig. It's Fertig. Boys and girls, don't miss it, because with the Stunt Show, you never know what you're going to get. The Thursday Night Extravaganza from 7 to 8, followed by Spin Class, Politics with Michael Fragan. Beach. And afterwards, Book of Life with Charlie Harari. And Mazel Tov to Charlie and Dina Harari on their being honored by Shor Yashuv this week. It was actually a really lovely dinner. I was happy to be able to be there. Finally, an hour of Jewish Soul with Charlie Bernhout. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, Nachum, 6 to 9 a.m. is the Yost JM in the a.m. And followed by Table for Two with Naomi Nachman. We are thrilled about the show. She's been doing great. Make sure to tune in. Don't miss Saturday Night Siegel, hosted by our one and only Avrami, the new proud papa. Mazal Tov to the Finkelsteins of Baltimore on the birth of a new baby boy. I'm not sure how after the Shalom Zachar he's going to be hosting Saturday night, but he's a trooper. He'll figure it out. This show will be rebroadcast Sunday at 1 p.m. on NachumSiegel.com. I'd like to thank my guests, Batya Jacob from Yachad. You can check out their website about the upcoming programming on wellness beginning this Monday. Go to yachad.org. And thanks to Michael Orbach, freelance writer for Tablet, the JTA, and NCSY's Ignite magazine. I cannot wait to have him back. Finally, thanks to Yael Lassen and to David, who has been subbing in here. He has been fantastic, and he's really become an integral part of this network. Don't forget, we leave for Israel next week. We're taking the show on the road. Three shows live from Jerusalem, including a That's Life from the OU Center during the pasta party. So I leave you today with the Yeshiva Mix by 6:13, because somehow or another it just puts me in a pasta party kind of mood. Chag Purim Sameach to all. That's Life, everybody. Bye, guys.
Diggy diggy darum, diggy diggy darum, darum. Mega beyavoy das yoim zoriz hu. Diggy diggy darum, diggy diggy darum, diggy diggy darum, darum. Avoy das hayom yim zoriz hu. Diggy diggy darum, diggy diggy darum, diggy diggy darum, darum. Mega beyavoy das yoim zoriz hu. Diggy diggy darum, diggy diggy darum, diggy diggy darum, darum. Avoy das hayom yim. Nicht mit, es bleibt gar nicht, ich bin Geld sich geben.
nicht auf der Grüne, die Inge Juren, die gelte Spuren, ich scheune ein Alter durch Geld behalten.